Gluten-free the way to be. When I first did this talk, some people, myself, was like, who in the heck's going to want to hear about that? And this has been one of the bigger turnouts, at least people who said they were going to come. And obviously, so we're going to be doing this again in a couple of weeks. So this has become kind of fad, gluten-free. Okay, we're talking about, we're going to define gluten. We're going to take you through a little adventure. And I won't give away the end of this, but it's a little bit more than is gluten-free the way to be. So I hope to make this talk. I only have 15, 20 real slides along with my joke slides. so it's a few slides relative to my mega mind talk and, you know, these other ones that I've done in the past. I'm not going to lace it with too much science. However, any time you guys have a question, there's no reason as we define things that there should be any questions as we go to the next slide. Please ask that question. There's no saying that there aren't any stupid questions. I think we all know there are. However, okay, please ask them anyways. No, really, if you have a question, almost certainly somebody else has that question and isn't asking it. So this is a talk that we need to educate people about. And I'll tell you why the primacy of this is. As I've gone through studies, and I'm going to give you a couple of quotes from scientists about the limitations of human thinking, the limitations of medicine, where we're at today, is my training as an MD was so far away from the talk I'm giving you today. One of the interesting things is I get agency authority from my MD, okay, a medical doctorate, okay. Agency authority means it gets you through doors, but does it really make you an authority on something? I'm going to tell you that my ability to evaluate scientific knowledge goes long before my medical degree. Okay. However, that training does help me assess what is real and what is fantasy in this world of ever-changing wisdom. And so I hope you to challenge me as well, because there's certainly things I don't know yet. I'm not even pretend to know. The more I know, the more I know I don't know. Okay? That's one of the benefits of myself, is I'm not too attached to any one discipline. When I started doing, and the reason I decided to do this talk, sorry, I just wasn't expecting bathing suits today. So the reason I started to do this talk is because 4 or 5 years ago, when I told people to try a gluten-free diet, everybody lost weight. Everybody. And if somebody didn't lose weight, I didn't believe they did it. And if I pestered them enough, they weren't. Now, okay, if I tell somebody to go on a gluten-free diet, almost uniformly people are gaining weight. And I went, what is going on? Okay, I mean, and it goes along with this plethora of available foods out there, gluten-free pastas and gluten-free cookies and gluten-free, they're everywhere, and Albertsons and everything. So gluten-free became so easy to do, everybody took the same bad habits that they had before and made them worse, just gluten-free. So I'm going to talk a little bit more than just being gluten-free in terms of human health. So what is gluten? Gluten does come from the Latin glue. It is the sticky stuff. Okay, now that is what it is known to be. It is a protein found in most grains, and there are many types of glutens. This is where the confusion goes. These are all the grains that have the gluten that we specifically talk about when we talk about a wheat gluten allergy, wheat gluten sensitivity. There are corn glutens and other forms of glutens as well, and we'll get into that. So it is a protein. This protein is toxic to the intestine, namely the brush border, where the subtle microvilli, those tiny little feathery things that spread out in the small intestine, where all our absorption and all of our digestion occurs, most of it occurs, okay? And that's where we do all those things. Now, this is an important thing. Every single person, because of the glue-like things, the brush border has a lysyl mucus member. Every person who eats these glutens gets sticky brush border, even if they're not allergic, sensitive, or anything else. Everybody reacts to gluten. 100% of people, okay, because it is the pasty stuff that you lick stamps. It's that kind of stuff. That is what you're eating, okay? Now, an estimated 3 to 10%, and in some studies, an indication up to 15% of people have celiac disease, an autoimmune disease induced by sensitivity to the gluten toxin. Now, this is actually as profound a point as you can have. We only have one identified autoimmune disease that we can say, an exogenous trigger, something that comes from outside of us, comes into us and causes our body to attack us. Now, I want you to hear that, because some people don't even quite understand this point. When you have celiac disease, you're eating something that causes you to attack you. Okay? Now, what a fascinating idea. And it's something that causes you to have an autoimmune disease. We know it, and we ingest it willingly. Okay? Now, you say, well, not everybody gets celiac disease. In people of Northern European heritage, this number can be 15, 20%. Okay? So the world round, it's lower, right? But that's the people who only get, and this is one of the most important distinctions, the most severe of the severe reactions to glutens, the autoimmune disease induced by a protein you're ingesting. That leads to damage throughout the entire body, absorption, immune complexes. I saw a kid, he was 17, had an MRI with brain lesions and things, told he had ADD, he was crazy, he just had celiac disease. He just didn't have many intestinal problems, okay? I see that stuff again and again and again. And there seems to be almost no limit to the autoimmune diseases associated with gluten sensitivities. Almost endless. Are all of them potentially related to glutens? Yes. Okay. Now, here's the kicker. If you use 10 or 15% as being a possible number for celiac disease, again, the severest of severe, you have 6 times as many people who have gluten sensitivity. So I joked, if you had 15% celiacs and 6 times that, 90% gluten sensitive, that's not much room for the rest of you. You know? So this is extraordinarily common, and there's much groundbreaking work by so many different Fasano. If you want to look up his work, he's done so much in terms of expanding our knowledge about what this gluten sensitivity thing is, how many different levels of reactions we can have to this gluten toxin, not gluten protein, gluten toxin. And the first thing I want you to understand is when you eat any of these foods, you're willingly putting a toxin into your body that is known to cause autoimmune disease and a myriad of other chemical reactions in the body, sensitivities that lead to almost any, and I cannot emphasize, arthritis, aging, dermatological disorders can be linked to gluten sensitivity. Now, it's a complex world. Because people ask about how do I follow up with nutrition? First, it was proteins were bad and carbs were bad and fats were bad, and I think I even heard fiber was bad recently. I'm a breatharian, you know. you can live on breath alone. Sorry, I'm not ascribing to that. I know there's some people who say they are, but I'm not going to get into that tonight. So this is the first point I want to make out to you, is that the glutens, and then we'll talk about lectins in just a little bit, if you didn't think the story was getting bad enough. The glutens are true toxins to your body that induce autoimmune diseases and sensitivities in probably next to everybody. The most conservative number you'll hear nowadays isn't 90% on gluten sensitivity. It's something more like 40% of people have a gluten sensitivity. Another up to 10% of people have celiac. So that is 50% of people. I mean, that's the conservative estimate now, based upon further testing that has become available. I will give some references at the end about all the different books I've read, and I can recommend them to you, and all the different articles on evolutionary biology and the history of man, Guns, Germs, and Steel, and some other wonderful books about why our bodies are not adapted to eating agricultural foods. Okay, so we'll get to that as well. So, gluten. A protein present in the grains that I listed. But we're going to get on to, what about the other grains? Because the question tonight was, is gluten-free the way to be? And I already kind of gave you a little teaser, which is, wow, if everybody's gaining weight on this, the number one problem in America, overweight and obesity, okay, is that the best thing to do? Interesting. Is everybody with me? Everybody scared. What is he going to say next? I want to emphasize the conclusions I'm coming to with you. You could have made 20 years ago or 30 years ago or whatever else like that. And so most of us don't want to go where I'm going to take you tonight because we don't want to know the truth, you know. And that's the unfortunate aspect of things. And so I'll give you some references about the history of man, our brain volumes, and everything that's occurring since the dawn of, you know, civilization. So there's many, many things that go into what has confused doctors in general about diet. Furthermore, the world gave over to doctors, MDs specifically, when I say doctors, there's many type of doctors, but I'm going to talk about MDs because we kind of ruled the roost for a while, the ability to lay down the law about nutrition when we were completely uneducated about it. Kind of weird, if you think about it. Okay. So, this was actually the point where I was to make sure everybody thinks. So, this is one of my favorite Far Side slides. Everybody knows that. So now Edgar's, all right, so gluten. Got the image? Okay. I use Gary Larson's stuff. Everybody knows that, you know, and I try to put it in as often as possible. So please support him, his foundation. Okay. Now, so what's up when we see, and I see so many people going gluten-free, especially, and I'm not kidding, my practice, you know, honestly, I started practice over 25 years ago, and you go back to, directly to 30 years ago when the entire epidemiology of human history changed. 30 years ago was the breaking point, okay? And I'm going to get to lectins in just a breaking point in human history, because we had a drug for cholesterol. We had to sell saturated fats and cholesterol as being evil, okay? Because how else would you buy the cholesterol mythology? And the American Heart Association, which still does it, the American Diabetic Association, everybody went, go carb, 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 carb. Yes, they cheered it on, okay? And human health has precipitously declined ever since we did it. Precipitously, especially overweight and obesity, because we bought a mythology that had, according to everybody, no science behind it whatever. Okay? Now, and this is important for you to understand, why are we eating the foods? And I'm going to get into sugars and things like that, but it goes beyond high fructose corn syrup. Okay? All right. But it goes into, why did we choose this? Because we had disempowered ourselves and given over our authority and our own nutrition to someone else who had an agenda, okay? And I don't mean that in a mean way whatsoever. It's just, this is interesting. So when we look at this, and I get to the lectins, what happened, especially now recently, is I see people stuck in the same mentality of carb, 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 going gluten-free and having more of the diseases of inflammation than maybe even with the glutens alone, okay? Why is that? And there's a group of proteins, like election, Latin, this lectins are proteins that glom onto sugars. Okay, they're ubiquitously found in almost all foods. I want to emphasize that. So when you hear people say, oh, it's just legumes or just grains, that's not true. Lectins are present in every single food. Okay, you got to ingest some of them. But some of them have more of an effect, microvilli binding, etc., similar to the glutens, even though they're not gluten, okay? So these sugar-binding proteins known as lectins are found in most grains and legumes as well, and other foods too. These lectins cause similar microvilli damage. There's thousands of research articles on this alone, okay? And have also been linked to the autoimmune diseases. And many of these grains, which are gluten-free, and I was just reading one of these last night, the night before, even quinoa, which is a pseudo-cereal, okay. Now, quinoa isn't even a cereal, a grain. It's in a different family, more related to, I think it's spinach and beets and things. Has some protein molecules that cross-react with gluten. Some species, not all of them. So, and if you're, when we get to the end, if I have to have a grain, quinoa is still the winner. Okay, quinoa is Q-U-I-N-O-A, not quinoa. Quinoa. Even it, and the reason I bring up quinoa right now, is even quinoa has some cross-reactivity with gluten sensitivity, which is, once again, the kid, he's 20-something now. Damn, I'm getting old. that kid. That has the gluten sensitivity, he is so rigorous, I know he's trying not to get gluten in his diet. I know he's doing it. However, I see tests all the time, stool tests and others that I do, showing that they're still reacting against gliadins, these proteins, okay? And I know they're still getting exposed because those levels would have gone down if they were gluten-free. So, and a part of that has to do with even eating any grain whatsoever, okay, that we find in lectins. I find in any other grain, and this, so when I talk about these primal diets, which is, I think you know where I'm heading, if you've, anybody's looked into the nutrition world, okay, I'm talking that any grain can be considered a toxin because these toxins are being produced literally as insecticides and things, ways of binding things and making an animal not eat it. Humans just don't tend to pay attention to what they're eating because we listen to other authorities instead of to ourselves. So, you can get over, because legumes, and legumes includes green beans, yes? Okay. Okay. But, okay, so this is always this little caveat. So if you have to eat a bean, remember with a grain, if you have to, because am I taking down all grains tonight? And the answer is yes, folks. Okay. Let's get to those punchlines. Quinoa would be my fallback, but it has the least cross-reactivity with other sensitivities, okay? Higher protein levels, higher fat levels. It's a better grain because it's not a grain. That's more or less the answer there. The next point, if you did have to have legumes and you can do things by fermenting or soaking, any beans can help pre-digest lectins, and there's nutritionists and dietitians that can help you with these things. One of the goals for us at our office is to hopefully soon even offer cooking classes for people who know more about this than I do. I know the science behind this, but am I the person you want helping you learn how to cook? Yeah. And you want me working on your car too. That would be no. Okay. However, there's people out there who have dedicated their lives to this. Those are the people you should be listening to about nutrition, not MDs. Now, when I talk about that, especially cardiologists, now I don't mean that in a mean way at all. Cardiologists have clung so tightly to the cholesterol mythology, they've thrown away almost all science. They're actually telling patients nowadays, your LDL can't be low enough. Your life-giving LDL cholesterol cannot be low enough is what you're being told. Seriously, that's what cardiologists are telling people nowadays. That is 100% inaccurate, okay? And why are they telling people this? It has to do with certain statin drugs, certain studies that indicate higher potency statin drugs have an effect, especially in male patients with heart disease. The fact that the rest of you dies doesn't matter to a cardiologist. Okay. Now, I don't mean that in a mean way. This goes back to subspecialty medicine. If your system wins and the other systems lose, you're the winner from a cardiology perspective. So we've taken our medicine and we've disintegrated it. And it's so tough, and I'm going to give you some great quotes, so tough for us to keep up, for me to keep up on this stuff is dizzying. Okay. And I have a mind that can do this pretty well. Okay. So keep up on all these levels of knowledge, because seriously, to understand this, you probably need to know a good deal of physics, philosophy, human history, etc., to really understand why we think we should eat the way we do, because it's not based on science. It's really interesting. It's based on politics and based on money. And so we're trying to get people to take back charge of their own health. That's what these community health updates are about, to understand what they're putting into their bodies. Now, insulin, because here's the next extremely important subject. I can make this subject a lot more complicated and throw in things like leptins and ghrelins and all kinds of other hormones. Okay, I really could. And it's fun for me. But I've often found it isn't fun for you. So depending on how selfish I'm being that day, insulin is a very important hormone, and there's not a person who hasn't heard about insulin, I don't think. It's produced in the pancreatic beta cells. Its primary role is fat storage. So I want to emphasize, the role of insulin in your body is to store fat. That is its primary role. It's to keep you from breaking down fat if it's present, so you can keep fat. It's promoting you to make fat. It's about making fat. That is what insulin does. It helps you stay fat. So anything that promotes insulin is going to promote obesity. Okay. It does help with regulation of blood sugar, but there are a myriad, and depending on how, all the things like that, a myriad, 5 to 10 hormones responsible for raising your blood sugar, one that can lower it. Do you know why? Because historically, lower blood sugar was a bigger issue, okay? And low blood sugar was a bigger problem, okay? So high insulin, and today's diets wander so far past what we have historically done and induce with through carbohydrates of any kind. And of course, I'm talking sugars now, all right? So if you're talking about the number one problem in causing insulin surge is that our bodies become easily overwhelmed by today's highly processed carbohydrate diet, all right? And a lot of confusion by glycemic index and glycemic loads. Is fructose just good for you because the corn people say so? and high fructose corn syrup and sugars in general. It's very interesting. There's something very much even about sweetness, the taste of it, that leads to insulin production. Yes?
So I have oatmeal every morning for breakfast to keep me healthy. So what is a healthy breakfast look like?
We'll get there. Okay, so we'll cover the background and we'll talk about what are the foods to eat. But that's a great question, and if I don't answer, make sure we do. But we want to do it in a set. So the question is, what is going to be a healthy breakfast? Okay, if oatmeal is not healthy, too high in carbohydrate, then what is a healthy breakfast? So, because even if, and I cannot emphasize enough, if not obese, which is not the only problem associated with insulin, hyperinsulinemia, depending on genetic predispositions, leads to any inflammation response. Inflammation is responsible for heart disease, not cholesterol. Okay? Inflammation is responsible for the Alzheimer's disease. So even if somebody's not eating enough, calorie-restricted, to gain weight, they are still putting them at much higher risk of these things. Of course, atherosclerosis, hypoglycemia. Anybody says, I have a history of hypoglycemia, it's usually because they're carb in and out. Okay? Fatty liver, especially high fructose corn syrup. Fructose is directly targeted. So when you do high fructose corn syrup, even if it has a slightly lower glycemic index, fructose in general, it directly targets the liver as a source for processing and leading to fatty liver disease, even more so. Now, even more so than just sucrose, which is like 50-50 glucose and fructose. High fructose corn syrup is like 55% fructose. The majority of changes in calories in America comes, and then since 1980, and sugars, especially high fructose corn syrup, but also carbs in general. So, all accelerated aging, most chronic disease due to insulin responses. Of course, the epidemic today that we see, because the earliest thing you're going to see when you change is the weight changes that come along with this. So the 30-year history that we're talking about from 1980 to 2000 is a doubling of obesity in America and increasing to right now, the estimates are by 2020, 80% of Americans will be overweight or obese. 80%, 4 out of 5, okay? All because you bought the fat mythology. And that's because in America, obesity rates stayed the same for decade after decade after decade. The 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the same. You bought low fat, and we killed you. Okay, and that's what happened when we bought the carbohydrate sugar mythology. If you still even have an inkling that eating low fat does anything but causes disease, it's because of your indoctrination, and you're not wrong because of it. Okay, you're just not medically accurate. And that's a distinction you can make, okay, is that, well, I bought something. And this is the difficult part for everybody, and especially doctors. Are doctors going to lead the way for this? On average, no, because they're still so indoctrinated. We'll talk more about this. Because of how much we sold to America this issue, it's very difficult for doctors to admit they're wrong. I know that's hard to believe, but I found it to be true. Okay. All right. And this is another, just to go in, I could go into study after study, but just to give you a few tastes, okay? The Women's Health Initiative, 20,000 women were prescribed a low-fat diet and reduced their daily intake by 360 calories a day for 8 stinking years. They got a 2-pound weight loss, but more abdominal fat, okay? Is there anybody out here who can relate to this story, okay? Okay? because it was never true, okay? You can't go low fat and count calories. It's never, and I said, counting calories has never, and it has never, can never, nor ever work as a long-term solution to obesity, because here is part of the problem. Obesity as a disease, especially from the worldwide view of Americans and a whole bunch of other things, was viewed as a disease of gluttony. If you just pushed away from the table, you wouldn't be fat. And that is still the basic dogma by which most recommendations are made today. You just need to push away from the table and you won't be fat. That is not true. Now, the problem is, it's a disorder of fat accumulation and the hormonal regulation of fat tissue. And I promise this is relevant for this gluten-free diet because we're talking about a whole plethora of poisons, the primary things, processed and other forms of carbohydrates, which damage our intestinal tract, cause disease, and we have now a great 30-year experiment of doing this with devastating results to your health. And so, when we look at this, the number one endocrine organ in most Americans' body, not their liver, fat tissue. Okay? Now, this is an important thing to understand. Your adipose tissue, fat tissue, okay, is not just sitting there and jiggling. Okay? All right. I guess I couldn't sit and jiggle, but you get the idea. It is a massively active, metabolically active organ, sending out these other hormones. And again, there's a movement these days because everybody wants their hormone to be a, is leptin more important than insulin? The evidence isn't there yet, but it's an important hormone that signals to the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland. It has to do with satiety, sense of feeling full, okay, as well as possibly controlling some of the insulin responses, partly behind the sweetness thing. Because this is my point where I want to point it, bring up to everybody. Every study that looks at substituting something for sugar has shown that you get the same amount of obesity, the same amount of diabetes, and the same amount of heart disease. You just get more strokes and other diseases. Okay? So once again, if you ever eat an artificial sweetener, you're asking for more disease and death. That doesn't seem like a logical choice. It has never, ever, ever been shown to use an artificial sweetener to get any improvement in outcomes, only bad ones. So why do we keep drinking Diet Cokes and Diet Pepsis and all these other things? Because it's an enculturation. We think it's got to be better because there's fewer calories. And calories were never the problem. They were only part of the problem. Smidgen. Every good lie has a little truth to it, right? You know, really does. Okay, so calories are part of the problem. And there's, again, I was had a patient the other day and, you know, the son was a physics major, and he wanted to make sure I knew that a human body was just a machine like anything else, and that I was going to get measurables, and he was angry, you know, classic male reductionistic medicine. It was funny because I don't think I was ever that bad, but you never know. But it's classic male reductionistic adolescent minds medicine that we do practice today. We try to reduce everything down into the simplest form, even though something as beautiful as a human organism is so much more complicated. And so the truth of the calories, yes, it plays a role in things. But if you remember, right here, if that basic rule, all you need to lose is 3,500 calories and you lose a pound of fat, these women would be non-existent, right? Okay? It's not true. It's never been true. Everybody who's ever studied calorie counting showed that it's not true that you can reduce calories. It actually works against you because of... it's not gluttony. It's not that you just need to push away from the table. It's that there's an enormously complex endocrine organ in your body that's growing on you. Okay? And becoming more important the more overweight you are. And when you lose, most of us lose weight quickly. We lose lean body mass and essentially become more relatively fat. And that fat becomes even more important the more you lose weight. Okay? So... the problem, and this I cannot emphasize enough, this is what most people still think of. They don't want to say it. You know, oh, I was gluttonous. You know, I've been gluttonous, but, you know, you don't go out and say it as a reason for your overweightness. Because, first of all, it's not true. I'm sure we've all had moments of gluttony, okay? But this is it. It's a hormonal disease. Obesity is a disease. And the causative factor in that disease, sugars, processed carbohydrates, and I'm going to emphasize, I've been saying that forever, and it doesn't make any difference. Not a bit. Because I've been telling people for a long time, my patients, cut out processed carbohydrates. What does that mean? It's absolutely the toxins known as grains and sugars in our diet, even legumes, which cause our obesity. And the experiment that's proved it is the last 30 years. Okay. Now, this is one of my favorite quotes of all time. Always upsets the vegetarians. Sorry out there. I promise we're going to get to breakfast too, by the way. I think we got one of the answers, though. this does go into, there's so many studies. If you take a eucaloric, those words just come out of my mouth. I'm sorry. A same calorie meal, okay, and make it all carbohydrate versus all protein and fat, okay, and you will let that person eat what they want the rest of the day. They've started with the same amount of calories. The person who ate the oatmeal or the things like that, if not checked, regulated, will eat almost twice as many calories during the rest of the day. You cannot fill up on carbs. They don't do it for you. Okay? Can't. Okay? The best analogy I would give is if you think about the metabolic fire, the carbs are like twigs and leaves. Okay? And if you, they burn, nobody's arguing, but you got to tend to that fire all the time. You got to keep throwing them in there. You're hungry all the time. Why? Because you keep throwing carbs in there. Fire's always hungry. Why is that? I keep on throwing in twigs and leaves, okay? So, what's the answer? Stop throwing in twigs and leaves and you won't be hungry all the time because you need fats especially to be the slow-burning protein, slow-burning calorie source for you, slow-burning log if you're a fire, okay? So that you can actually tend to other things other than eating. So this grazing craze that's out there is especially true if you're not eating healthy fats. And we'll talk about what healthy fats are. Actually, the next talk, is, you know, we're going to keep with this whole rhyming thing, is fat where it's at. And we'll talk more extensively about the fat physiology and try to make it a little bit more user-friendly so people get more comfortable with that. Because that's a great question. I always get that. So what can I eat now? Okay, hopefully we'll address that. But they're made out of meat. anyways, this is the problem. You guys have seen me do this before too. And so when we read the China study but we look at the critical reviews of those things, we've been taught now that fats were bad, but now it's proteins that are bad for you. Okay. And so now it's become really confusing. And actually one of the most, you know, potentially negative outcomes of the things like the China study would be people going more towards grains, which truly are the most toxic substances we have in our diet. That being stated, if you take a cow that should be running around eating grass, their omega-3 content of their muscle and things, they're not marbleized. Okay, marbleized fat, marbleized meat is diseased meat. So most of you are out there choosing, actually paying more for the marbleized, diseased stuff because you think it's tastier, okay? And I cannot emphasize enough, anybody who's really tasted good grass-fed beef, it's a lot tastier than the corn-fed, marbleized gunk that we do. It goes back to the early 1900s, and who's the guy who wrote The Jungle? I'm blocking. Sinclair, okay, and he did a lot to expose what we were doing in the meatpacking industry and the horrors of the red slime. We're even hearing the echoes of that today, right? Okay, and so I am not in any way, shape, or form promoting people eating corn-fed, antibiotic-fed, hormone-injected beef, chickens, okay, it goes to chickens too, tilapia, farm-raised tilapia is worse for you than corn-fed beef, okay, so if you're eating any form of farmed, horribly processed, and I'm not talking about pepperoni, I'm talking about how you raise it, okay? These sorts of things. You're getting diseased animals and making a diseased body. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. Am I encouraging anybody to eat that kind of stuff? Never, okay? Now, I'm not saying if you go out and you're with someone, you can always find that, okay? So I tell people make the healthiest choice possible. However, when you can control and eat smaller portions of organic meat, which is naturally lean, by the way. All right, so like venison and things. So that's a deer, sorry. I do encourage people not to eat anything they wouldn't kill themselves. I think that's a good rule to follow. Okay, so if you wouldn't do that, then I wouldn't eat it if I were you. Okay, but make healthy decisions. Don't just make decisions in life about what you're afraid about or what you won't do. The most unhealthy people in my practices are the vegetarians. And by far have the most disorders and things. I'm not saying they can't be healthy, because they can be the healthiest people too. Okay, so I want to emphasize. But it's a much more, you have to be much more vigorous in what you do. And so I would tell people, can you eat a diet, especially if you incorporate, again, grass-fed, non-antibiotic-fed, non-hormone-injected cow milk? Yes, if you're not. Now, once again, if you ever have a sensitivity to food and you say, I eat dairy and I break out in a rash, please don't eat dairy. This talk isn't for, and if I'd say the same thing if I told you to eat blueberries tonight, you went, well, I can't eat blueberries. Well, don't. but in general, blueberries are good for you, okay? So please always use your own common sense. We do the same thing with coffee, right? So there's so many, there was even the last talk we did. Every study on coffee has shown the health benefits of it, but still people say, I'm not going to drink it because it's bad for me. And it's like, where do you get that? And it's somewhere in the subterfuge that people keep repeating the same lie again and again, and it certainly becomes true. And so, but if you don't do well with coffee, don't drink it. That's good common sense, okay? don't eat boneless chickens, please. McNuggets, etc. Is everybody clear when I say to eat meat, I'm saying stay organic, grass-fed, antibiotic-free as much as you possibly can. Drive that change. Eat by half as much to spend the same amount, because that's about what it is, okay? But that's a better decision, and it's tastier. Eat slowly and consciously and revel in the taste of it. Add spices and broaden your views of things in terms of how you eat foods. And I'd say the same thing for chicken or wild-caught salmon or whatever other meats that you choose to eat or not choose to eat. But I would consider eating eggs or dairy if you want to stay vegetarian, because those, especially most systems of healing, Ayurvedic medicine, dairy is considered one of the most powerfully wonderful healing substances. Next to almonds, ghee is considered one of the top things. So reconsider that if you're able to find organic, milk. Yes?
I'm just going to say, what's a vegetarian?
You can do things to get past lactose intolerance. The biggest issue is dairy tend to be the dairy proteins. And so in terms of eating, then it becomes more and more difficult. It becomes about soaking and fermenting whatever beans you do to get rid of the lectins. Okay. So it's much more difficult. It does go into so funny. Quick funny story. Okay. So I was playing Words with Friends. Okay. And I played crap. And somebody said, what are you, a scatologist? And I went, I had to look that one up. And do you know what a scatologist is? Does anybody know? Because I didn't, okay? You study poop, okay? There's people who study poop for a living. I thought this was just awesome, okay? so I started looking into it in terms of some of the other things. Well, why would you? Nowhere in human history were we ever vegetarian. It's a complete myth to be a vegetarian. I'm not saying it's an unacceptable myth, but the idea that we were meant to be vegetarian is not true, biologically in any way.
Vegetarians are saying that necessarily.
What's that?
I don't think vegetarians are saying that we are meant to be vegetarians.
Right.
But we can be healthy as a vegetarian.
It's possible. It's extraordinarily difficult. Okay.
It's the cruelty.
I'm very much into that. I agree with you completely. If you go back to the way man has treated things, etc., and hunted beasts to the point of extinction tens of thousands of years ago. So it's a long-standing history, this cruelty to beasts that we are preying upon. I'm not arguing differently with that. And I knew this was going to be the one area that everybody was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? I can't eat things with eyes. I thought it was forks over knives. It's possible. I cannot emphasize. I'm just saying, historically speaking, we are not run on vegetables. We never did. So the idea that it's healthy for us is a made-up fantasy. I can't not say that it can't be done, but the idea that it is a natural state of being or that it's something that we did in the past or anything else is not true. Now, I agree with you. It can be done extraordinarily healthy. I'm not disagreeing with that. It's that most vegetarians, you're now talking about several hours a day to tend processing foods and soaking beans and doing the other things if you want to eat healthy and not incorporate the most toxic substances of all time. sugars and grains. By far the most sought, and just solely focus on fruits and vegetables, and or eggs, and or dairy. Okay. I know that's vegetarian. I'm not talking vegan. Vegan is more difficult. So as you take the next step, vegetarian is very possible without any grains or sugars whatsoever. Vegan becomes a little bit more difficult. I'm sorry, a lot more difficult. Okay. And so, but that's vegan is even still possible in this. But it's not a healthy way of being from a historical standpoint. Studying of human evolutionary biology, et cetera, goes on and on and on about the people who have studied this. The mental capacity, everything else has diminished ever since we started turning towards civilization. Now, I can't emphasize, that's a very complicated subject. It involves toxic chemicals. It goes on and on and on. And so, but it has directly related to our change in dietary patterns. Incorporating grains has been bad for human health. That being stated, can you be vegetarian? Yes, of course. Healthily with grains and toxins that we're talking about? Not so much. Yes? Great question. The question goes back into, so you've read a common thing is that no mammals drink another animal's milk, and again, humans even after weaning. I mean, you could take to the same point from that what latest Time magazine went, how long should we be breastfeeding? But that's another thing in terms of even for our kids. There's a lot of things humans do that no other species has ever done is the only thing I would tell you. And so, and it goes into the degree of killing all the animals, and no other animal goes out and cultivates and grows grains. No other animal goes out and does any of these things. So the argument that because no other animal does that doesn't really hold water, because you could say that about almost anything we do as a species. And so now that, so if we are doing things, is that gentler? That's one of the things I'd say. Is it gentler to take milk from an udder of a cow than it is to kill it? I would suggest yes. Okay. you don't think so? Again, the reason you say no is because she's saying no, it's not gentler to take milk from a strapped animal. It's better to kill it.
Because of the way they're raised,
really that's not the point. Hold on. So once again, she's missing the point. Okay, that's really important. You're talking about the current processing and the way we do it. I agree with that completely. But you're talking about wild-fed animals raised in a gentle way, etc., throughout history. That's not the same thing as the highly processed milk we drink today. So it's not the same thing. So yes, I have to agree. We have to take that out of the equation to make it what we're talking about, because that goes into like Premarin. You know, we used to torture horses. Premarin is pregnant mare urine, and catheterize them and pull the estrogens out of them, thinking it was a good thing for us. Come on. and is it bad for us because of the way we treated the animals, or is it bad for us because the form of estrogens really weren't matching humans? And the answer is probably both. Okay.
But suggesting that people nowadays can eat dairy, any type of dairy that you're talking about, is with the population as high as it is today, it's just not even practical.
And what you're talking about is human beings, are we sustainable in the world today? No. So you better take care of yourself by eating these ways and making it feasible for more organic farmers and ranchers and everybody else to do this. Because otherwise, you're selecting yourself out for the same fate as everybody else. So this goes back into, are what humans doing today sustainable? No. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. Okay.
There's not enough land, for example.
There actually is, for the conscious few. So this is, once again, there's a big movement from the 1% who eat this way to get the 99% to fall into this category of eating Big Macs and things that are sustainable so that they die slow deaths. I've got to make it clear to you. You got to not fall for that kind of conditioning, because it's the money drive that's making you go this way. Now, don't get me wrong. We have to be less cruelty to animals and be as sustainable. Is this what I'm talking about? Can the entire world eat this way? No. I'm talking to Americans right now. I can't talk to the rest of the world about this or anything else. I can talk to the Americans who have most bought into this and have the greatest discrepancy, top income, bottom income, low income people eating the worst foods, top income. And you have to separate yourself away from these issues that are used to manipulate you. Okay, which is the rest of the world can't eat this way. Well, you can, so make a conscious decision to recycle. Make a conscious decision to drink more water as compared to sodas. Make a conscious decision to do these things, and you'll be being the change in the world that you hope to see. Can the rest of the world do that? That's, again, peace in the world starts with peace within. Okay. So, and if you keep eating in a way that caters to something else other than your own health, then you won't be the peace that you hope to see in the world. Yes?
This may seem off topic, but it relates to what you're saying. Did you say that the apparent morphological change is taking place in kids from age 0 up to young people, like, say, in their 30s now, where apart from obesity, you see more and more size zeros in the Caucasian population among young women? Mm-hmm.
Enormous. I mean, there's so many factors that go into what is civilization. So if we look at the big diseases of today, metabolic syndrome, hypertension, and those and diabetes, all epidemic in children, let alone the autism and everything else, that goes into the generational effect, because that last 30 years of obesogenic diets is leading to these unhealthy children. And it's not vaccines, sorry. It's the way we're eating. And this is, I cannot emphasize enough. The way we're eating, especially, and I'm not, please, let's make a thing about vaccines. I'm just saying there's so much more evidence for the nutrition affecting our children than there is for these other things. And so that's part of the reason why this is such an important talk, because we don't realize every time I'm downing a high fructose corn syrup, Arizona iced tea because it's healthier than whatever, Hansen soda or whatever else, we're really causing insulin surges and diseasing our own body, and yes, the next generation as well. Okay, and we have to at one point break that trend. And is high fructose corn syrup one of the most sustainable things that you can find? The answer is yes. Okay, that's the problem with the concept of sustainability. We can't just use these arguments to hurt our own health.
Yeah, I was wondering, are you able to heal the microbiota that's been damaged by eating gluten and lectins?
The great question goes into, can you heal the microvilli if they've been damaged by the glutens, correct? Okay, and so the number one most important thing is to eliminate glutens. And what my experience is, and with cross-contamination of foods and things, and seeing in my own practice, is people who are just going gluten-free, they aren't getting all the way there, the healing their villi and things. And I think it's true for everybody else. It's especially true for celiac people, is that you got to cut out these grains. We've never needed them. They're toxins, is what they're eating, and there's other wonderful foods that we can put in their place, and so that's the other most important part of it. There's a lot of wonderful things, and you can do it vegetarian. I'm not trying to say different. It's just more difficult.
It's the wording that it's a vegetarian myth, and I think I agree with you that you can't be vegan and continue to be a standard American diet and convenience foods. Obviously,
right.
You're not going to be healthy, but
right.
There's plenty of examples of healthy vegans out there.
There's healthy vegans. And there's unhealthy vegans. There's healthy carnivores. There's unhealthy carnivores. Okay. What I would tell you right now, and again, what's worse, and I want to be clear, what's worse, eating a Twinkie or a Big Mac burger? I don't know. I don't know, whatever, but you know, it's a very difficult thing because you shouldn't be eating either one. And that's the point is, I did have a doctor friend once who said, I think I'm going to be a vegetarian. And when I go to McDonald's, I substitute the apple tart for the McDonald's burger. Seriously. Okay. Now, again, that, you know, she was pushing what I didn't know what to tell her. It's like, okay, you know, but you're not getting red slime, but what, you know, apple tart, wow. You know, so, but the point being very, very busy, is it probably a little healthier to have some protein? I don't know, but it's just, we got to look at it. It's much more difficult to be a healthy vegan or vegetarian. It can be an extraordinary healthy lifestyle. The reason I use the term mythology is because it is a myth to say, because that's the problem, is people believe, I have to be an omnivore, I have to be a carnivore, I have to be a vegetarian. None of that is true. It's just mythology, okay? It's a belief system we create that runs our lives. And we want to make this a little bit more about science and listening to our own bodies. Can you eat this way and be much more towards vegetarian than carnivore? Absolutely. Can you be much more towards carnivore than vegetarian? Yes. Or ketogenic, which is another thing. Yes.
I just read this last week. You're making meat protein, muscle protein in the lab, And they say in 50 years,
mm-hmm.
we won't have to drink mineral anymore.
Yes.
Do you know anything about this?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can clone meat. You can do it. And so, I mean, that's opening the proverbial can of worms. We aren't there yet. So was I planning on addressing that? No, because it's not here. I mean, so, and would that be better for us? Wow. I, you know, it depends on which genetic type you took and all. You'd have to look at the content. I don't know. I mean, we're not there yet, but it's a good question, because if we did that, would that take away some of the, you know, the footprint that is taken to raise these animals? Yes, it would. Jane? Yeah.
You talked about the things we should be. Can you tell us some things we should be in?
Yes, we're getting there. We're getting there. Not a thing. Just kidding.
You never told us that the microbes are alive in the field.
Yes, sorry, they can't. If you take away, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you, thank you. They can if you take away the gluten, sorry. And the key is that you have to take more, I think, than just these gluten-free and expand, because the problem we see so many people going gluten-free now is rice pastas and all these other things and the obesity and inflammation and a whole set of problems added on top of it. Furthermore, if you've had gluten sensitivity for a while, you've had damage to your intestine, a leaky gut, and might be allergic to a whole host of other foods, that goes into other sensitivity testing. You might need your gastrointestinal tract repaired. There's a program on our website called Digestive Difficulties, okay, talking about repairing your digestive tract, because that has to be a whole process. The longer this has gone on, the more time it takes to heal your digestive tract so that you're not sensitive to everything else as well, because most of the other food sensitives come from the leaky gut related to the lectins and the glutens in our diet, which have destroyed most people's functioning gastrointestinal tract. If you look at today's world, everybody has constipation, diarrhea, heartburn, all these other things, and they think it's normal. Seriously, most people think it's normal to have these things because they have it every day. Why do you have it every day? Because you're eating gluten and rices and grains every day. That's why you have all these things. It's not a normal function. It just seems normal. But it is treatable. If you get away from the toxins, the 4-hour program, and this is on our website, it is the first part is to remove, and I want to go through this briefly, remove stress from the eating environment. Stress is still the single greatest cause of disease in our society, the greatest cause of hypersensitivity to any phenomenon, stress, and its effect on our physiology. It can start with eating, slow down, turn off all distractions, and let your food talk to you. I've had this people do this. If you ever eat a Big Mac consciously, you can never eat one again. Ever. I promise you this. Ever. Do this experiment. Get away from McDonald's, pull it out of the wrapper, and let it talk to you. Just sit in front of you. Have a conversation with that Big Mac. I am not kidding you. Do you really want to eat this? And it's staring at you, and you're going, not really. Okay? And by Terry, take it to your mouth slowly and consciously. And, what's those smells? Okay? All the warning signals. Then you bite into it, that bread that's horribly stale, the wilted lettuce, the nasty sauce, that meat that is unidentifiable. I haven't done this in so long. You can see I'm living it, okay? All right? It's horrific. And, you know, the point of this is every single signal to not eat that Big Mac was always there, but you didn't listen, okay? So why do we choose to eat unhealthily? Because we're stressed, we don't let our food become part of us. So the first R in remove is to become a conscious eater. Remove stress from the eating environment. Slow down, sit down, chew thoroughly. Love your food. Let it become part of you. Listen, and if you're 3 sprigs into broccoli, which is good for you, and you stop, your stomach says, wait a minute, I'm done eating broccoli. What do? No, broccoli's good for me. I'm eating the whole thing. Or I paid for it, or I cooked it, or somebody's got to have to eat this. Okay? All those reasons, and you don't listen to yourself about the good stuff either when you're, because you get into the mental part of it, which is, I'm going to eat this because this is good for me. Well, what happens if your body said, no, 3 sprigs of broccoli was fine today? You said, well, I ate it, or I bought it, or I whatevered it. Okay? You don't listen because we're pre-programmed to finish our whole plate or whatever else is going on, you know? My favorite things from Deepak was, Deepak Chopra was, you know, he said literally when he was raised as a kid that his mom told him, you have to finish your plate. Children are starving in China. And so, you know, it's a worldwide global lie in terms of having to finish your plate. So all these things factor in. So we take stress out of the eating environment. The next R is to remove sensitivities. The sensitivities can be any number of things that you sometimes need to get testing for, but sometimes it means eliminating certain things. And listen to your own body. If every time, let's just pick on broccoli for some reason. Broccoli is a good food, on average. And you don't do well with it, you might be allergic to broccoli. It can happen, okay? So listen to your own body. I'm not always just saying about testing. The third part of the remove, this is still the same R, okay, is to remove pathogens. I do a lot of stool testing. It is shocking how many people have H. pylori, other bacterial overgrowth, parasites, candida, a large part linked to the imbalance caused from gluten sensitivities leading to an abnormal flora and a damaged intestinal tract. Those sometimes need to be taken care of as well. The second R is to replace. Replace things like enzymes. After the age of 50, digestive function does go down. I'm not saying everybody over 50 needs digestive enzymes, but think about gingers, chewing fennel seeds after meals, doing other things, digestive bitters, or digestive enzymes with meals if you have digestive difficulties. Third R is to replace. Probiotics. Replacing good flora. It's a darn good idea. Okay. Quick note on prebiotics. Okay. Prebiotics are the good things that help your probiotics grow. Chicory and inulin, stevia, fructooligosaccharides in general. It's a really important understanding. If you have pathogens in your body, parasites and other things, those things help them grow too. So if you have a suspicion that you have an imbalance in your GI tract, it's best to get a stool test and not putting these prebiotics in and making your candida grow. Putting prebiotics in and making your parasites grow, because that can happen too. So it's the best analogy. Make sure you weed your yard before you start throwing fertilizer on and seeds. Okay? A prebiotic are the things meant to help them grow. They're like fertilizer to your yard. So a probiotic would be good bacteria that you want to throw in there and help them grow. It's a lot more complicated than that. And prebiotics are meant to help them flourish. Okay? And in some cases, if you have healthy flora already there, it's better, like you have a yard full of grass, but it's just not growing very well. You're better off putting fertilizer than more probiotics in. So inulin, Jerusalem artichoke, chicory, very many prebiotics, things that help the bacterial flora, you know, thrive, like putting fertilizer on your lawn. And sometimes more effective than just adding in probiotics. And I tell people a monthly rotation of probiotics. Every probiotic tells you that they're the only one you will ever need. That's not true. That's a marketing. Okay. Use different ones from different families. Furthermore, the far enough part is repair. The fourth R is repair, and we want to do things to heal that GI tract. Sometimes your body needs help healing, like you need a Band-Aid to really help it heal sometimes, okay, or stitches or whatever else. So some people with the glutens and the lectins in their diet have such a damaged intestinal tract. They have so many digestive symptoms that you need to do things to help it repair. Glutamines, aloe, DGL, slippery elm, different herbs and other things that can be used to heal. All this is on part of that digestive difficulties. And if you have digestive difficulties, this is a wonderful program. The analogy is like the acronym RICE for a sprained ankle, rest, ice, compression, elevation. If you want to really heal a sprained ankle, do them all, okay? Many people have tried bits of what I just told you for their digestion, okay? And that they need to do is all four together. Does that make sense? It's sort of like rice. It's like rice for your intestine. All at the same time. That's the most important part. Some people say, well, I tried enzymes, it didn't work. And I tried going gluten-free, and it didn't work. And I tried, you know, aloe vera juice, and it didn't work. And it's because you just did one of the R's, or, you know, you didn't take care of the whole thing. Okay?
You said, can we remove, replace, repair?
Remove, replace, re-inoculate, repair. Yes?
Cross-contamination.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's really important for those that have celiac, but is it as important for those that have sensitivity? You're
recovering that. Great question. But that goes to the genesis of this talk, though, okay? If it's truly celiac disease, and that's all that we're worried about, okay, then you really have to be careful just from getting an exacerbation of celiac disease from almost the tiniest, even maybe microgram concentration of gluten. So that's why many oats that say they're gluten-free might even have that much level of gluten contamination, okay, oatmeal or something like that. The bigger picture, though, is that there's so many other lectins causing similar damage that aren't even glutens. That, to me, is the biggest issue that we're missing. Right? It's that all these grains are toxic to our intestinal tract at varying portions in the population. Yes? Corn is a grain as well, okay? So when we try to get people eating this, because remember the previous thing I was focusing on was this insulin, okay? Is that we have to regulate insulin. If we don't regulate insulin through the moderation of carbohydrates in our diet, we will not be healthy long term. And that corn is still high glycemic and a profound source of carbohydrates, very difficult to eat much of. And we'll talk about, even though I'm not a big counter, how many grams of carbs to eat. This is an old quote from Thomas Edison. And the real thing, especially when you study populations pre-Americanization of their diet, some Inuit populations and Native American populations, almost, again, Schweitzer wrote extensively about this, no cancer at all. I mean, it was like one person out of 25,000, no diabetes. Even in the early 1800s, Sir William Osler, the father of internal medicine, would talk about, you know, getting on horseback and going miles to a hospital just to see this bizarre thing called a heart attack. Okay. So, really, I mean, and nobody would ever write about it because they're unheard of until, again, it's directly correlates with the sugars and carbohydrates in our diet. This is the point I was trying to make about. And it says, each science combines itself to a fragment of the evidence and weaves its theories in terms of notions suggested by that fragment. Such a procedure is necessary by the reason of the limitations of human ability, but its danger should always be kept in mind. I'll go through this. Observing that researchers have to take on faith, the scientific research and the scientific knowledge of other researchers whose results they are borrowing, he notes it will usually be the case that these loans really belong to the state of science 30 or 40 years earlier. And this is one of the key things that I think you will see. Using the American Heart Association as an example, as the leading cause of heart disease in America. And I have every evidence to prove that. Because their job isn't about knowledge of nutrition. They're not about favoring a certain environment that favors certain pharmaceutical industries. And so we substituted margarine for butter. And margarine will lower your cholesterol about 10 points and maybe increase your risk of a heart attack tenfold. Okay. Now, I want to give you a very clear point of evidence here. You can lower cholesterol and raise your risk of heart disease dramatically. Okay. So, and I'll give you some more evidence about other things. The problem is it's difficult to be a cardiologist. And it is. I mean, they have a lot of work to do. They're busy. They're saving lives. I respect the heck out of them, okay? But this is the key. Asking them about nutrition when they have no training about it is just mean to them, okay? It is, because they know nothing about it, and you ask them. So that's why I always tell people, if you walk into a lion's den, you really are asking to be bitten, even if you didn't think you wanted to, okay? If you walk into the cardiologist, they're required to tell you stuff that's part of their indoctrination. They haven't spent the time looking at other people's research or anything else, because this goes back to the perfect example, the fragmentation of medicine. Gynecologists still prescribe Premarin and Provera. Still, okay? Still. Because all they care about is a uterus. And if the uterus doesn't get cancer, it doesn't matter if your breasts do. It doesn't matter if you die of any number of other things. Their system wins. Disintegrative. The evidence to not use Provera was there decades ago. Okay, I stopped using it when I finally looked at something other than the medical literature. Okay, the Western medical literature. So why are doctors still using it? Indoctrination. It's all they know. And they're still decades behind in things that aren't quite theirs. And this is the point I'm trying to bring across to you. The gynecologist who you're trusting for your hormones doesn't look at you as a whole person. They can't. It's too complicated. It's limited by the human ability to understand all those complicated systems. And if you just go happen to get breast cancer, we have a breast surgeon for you. Okay? Cardiologists. They're only focused on one thing, these coronary arteries. Okay? And what happens to the rest of you isn't that relevant from their perspective. It's just their training. I'm honestly not being mean. I think they're great, okay? But I wouldn't get nutrition advice from them because they don't know it. It's just that simple. I have this very problem. And it's an interesting thing. You know, my dad had a heart attack about a year and a half ago, and he's still eating a low-fat diet. His health has deteriorated so much since he started eating this way. Okay. He won't listen to me because his cardiologist tells him to eat that way. And that's a problem with listening to a cardiologist and not somebody who knows nutrition.
What about the prescriptions the cardiologists
give you? The question is about the prescriptions the cardiologists give you, and that's another subject entirely, okay? The French eat more saturated fat than almost any Western country. Incidence of heart-related death among middle-aged men is less than half of that in America, lowest rate in the area with the highest fat consumption. People in northern India, please read this, eat 17 times more animal fat compared to the south, and the incidence of heart disease is 7 times lower. This is true. This studies go on and on for about 55 out of 60 populations studied. Okay, is it true for every population studied? No. Pretty much everyone, pretty close. And the overwhelming evidence was never that saturated fat. The thing is, it's funny, it's not a paradox. It's just the truth of things. Fats never caused any of this, ever. It was the view that Americans were gluttonous. That's what made us think that they ate fat and they're eating fat, they're living high on the hog, fat, fat, fat. That was the viewpoint, and that's why we're more fat than other people in the world. At a 10 to 15% rate, okay? And that was the problem. We were fat eaters, okay? And a mythology was born. And that's why it's important to talk about the terms mythology. We're often believing in things that aren't necessarily true. Even the research of the Framingham Heart Study, the diet heart hypothesis that suggests the high intake of fat and cholesterol causes heart disease has been repeatedly shown to be wrong, and yet for complicated reasons of pride, profit, and prejudice, the hypothesis can be exploited by scientists, fundraising enterprises, food companies, governmental agencies. So when people ask, is it, you know, these diets, they seem to be keep changing, the answer is the views of them keep changing, okay? But the truth of the matter is that a lot of conclusions were jumped to based upon the problems of the previous thing, which everybody's studying a little piece, and the cholesterol plaque is a part. Cholesterol, small, dense LDL, is a part of the heart disease problem. I'm saying different. So that was, like I said, part of any good lie has to have some truth to it. And lowering LDL, and I want to be clear, statin drugs that the cardiologists use, in men with heart disease under 65 have been proven to decrease risk of heart attack. In any other group, they have never been proven to long-term improve outcome. You get pretty numbers, but you don't necessarily help get benefits from them. And the staggering evidence on neurological health, muscle health, it goes on and on, especially CoQ10 depletion. It's amazing. I'll go a little bit into the drugs. But it's that mythology that drives why you think fat's bad for you, why you still look for low-fat dairy, low-fat yogurts. Herd mentality. It's kind of fun. And it's easier to be part of a herd, I found, okay? Because, you know, most people, if you sit in line, you know, an old Southern saying, you know, people don't bark at parked cars, okay? So if you're being barked at, okay, that means you're doing something, okay? But most people don't like being barked at, okay? I'm sorry, that metaphor means you got to be pissing people off if you're doing something right. It's not what you try to do, but it challenges them. The point of something today is to challenge you, okay, not piss you off. Okay, if you get pissed off, it's probably, I've always found this to true. If I was ever pissed off, there's because there was a truth there for me that somebody was rankling on. Okay, and so if it challenges me, then I find excitement and I look more and I research. I always tell people, I don't expect everybody to accept what I say is true. I research and I really will tell you, I look at it as being possibly true and then see for yourself. The best I've gone through all the paleo books. And the paleo movement is a very difficult thing for people because it pretty much says we need to cut out sugars, grains, legumes. And this is what we do eat. I promise we're getting there. Okay? These are all the references. I have cute pictures and everything from online Google images. I'm learning every day. This guy, Mark Sisson, also talks about exercise, and I'm going to show things. I'm not saying there are many other books out there, and some that I think from an intellectual standpoint, the work of Gary Taubes, et cetera, might be a little bit better. And I could give you other reasons why I like certain things, but other books that I wouldn't really read because they're so anti-everything, you know? That's why, really, you can tell there's such an agenda in this world. Somebody really wants to hate soybeans, they will hate them really bad for you. I'm just saying it's something I'd suggest not eating. It's a legume, by the way. and so, Mark Sisson, I think, writes really well. Back here, this Mark's Daily Apple, I encourage anybody, just go on that website, sign up for the email, okay? Get some free ebooks and at least look at it. I'll show you his basic primal blueprint laws, and I have a hard time making believe that any of it is not reasonable. And you got to wonder where we started with this. Gluten-free, the way to be. I didn't necessarily do hand gestures, but, you know, never had any cheerleading background, but, you know, why? I did the YMCA in certain dance clubs, but that's a long time ago. Moving right along. but I really think this is well-written, great information, okay? And I really don't think gluten-free is enough. That's what I'm basically getting to, is that I think for the epidemic diseases of today, chronic degenerative diseases, hypertension, obesity, diabetes, coronary artery disease, let me emphasize, high cholesterol is a sign. It's not even a disease. It's a mythology that high cholesterol equals heart disease. That's another mythology, okay? And you have to remember how many mythologies you've bought into. Challenge yourself. I believe in this. And it's like, wait a minute. This is not a belief system. This is something tangible I can get a hold of, okay? Belief systems are wonderful for things that are unmeasurable. These are measurables, okay? So those are the books. This one especially, Paleo Comfort Foods, I like because, you know, you can get this using coconut flour, you can make fried chicken and biscuits and other things using healthy things that don't include this. So you can expand upon, you can end up eating a biscuit or fried chicken using coconut flours and almond flours. It's about changing the way you view foods so that you put healthy things into you. Oh, sorry, yes?
You talked about sugar being bad. What about fruit, which has sugar?
Fruit has such a low level. This goes back into, so you get maybe 5 grams of a carbohydrate in an apple, okay? And so, and that is such a low amount, and this goes right into what I'm talking about. This is a good general, and this is a tough one, primal blueprint carbohydrate curve. Less than 50 grams a day is these ketogenic diets. That's its own subject we're not going to go in today, but I will talk about more when we talk about, you know, is fat where it's at, okay? So let's not worry about ketogenic diets. 50 to 100 grams, I really strongly agree, up to 400 calories per day in carbs. So you can eat fruits as part of this. In general, the rules for in terms of eating, you can eat whatever meats, organic, again, wild caught, please remember all that aspect of it too. You can eat whatever vegetables, the main American vegetables, white potatoes, and when I say white potatoes, anything in the potato family, including the red ones and the gold ones and the purple ones, potatoes out. And corn, people think of as a vegetable, so I just put it in now. It's not a vegetable, it's a grain. So American vegetables, basically corn and potatoes out because they're starchy vegetables, very high in carbs, okay? High effect on insulin and degeneration, inflammation, okay? If you're trying to lose weight, less than 150 to 100 grams of carbs, which is, 200 to 400 calories of carbohydrates through fruits and vegetables. That's where you get them. Okay. You can stay within this easily. If you start eating even one piece of bread or two pieces of bread, you start getting past that. That's why those things are so dangerous. It's the carb load. And the effect on insulin is more important to me than just lectins and glutens. But all of these things, the carb load, the lectins, and the glutens are all part of the damage to the body that we're trying to avoid. That's why they're so toxic. Okay. And if it came right down to it, if you're only worried about one thing, cutting out the lectins and the glutens, white bread is better for you, okay? Because white bread has less of the toxins that we're trying to get rid of, okay? White rice is better for you. It's not better metabolically. It's better antigenically, meaning things that would react to you. Now, once again, take-home message today. Gary said to eat white bread. No. Okay. I'm saying white rice has less antigenic lectin problems, okay, brown rice has more of the lectins and therefore more problems with the gastrointestinal tract. However, white rice has as much because it has the same carb load, and the biggest problem is eating rice still gives you the problems here, keeping within this, keeping the carbs down, okay, which affects insulin. And you can do that absolutely through vegetarian and nuts and seeds, etc. But this is a good rule, and this is on that Mark's Daily Apple website, by the way, okay? Everybody knows that I think we need help. We need teams of people working together for your health. I do think everybody could learn more about nutrition, me especially. I've read textbooks of nutrition that are so incredibly wrong from so many ways because they're inculcated with these past belief systems based upon data that was never really there, okay? And so we have to continue re-educating. It's a practice of medicine every day. And I can't emphasize enough, by far, if you look, and this is the only reason I'd look biologically throughout thousands of years of history, you incorporate these forms of carbs, you have enormous medical problems. It's that simple. Cancer, everything. Yes?
Could you summarize, I think I can see the chart in here, the mm-hmm. carbs, the sugars, the proteins, and the fats.
So all I do, because this is once again, going back to this study, counting calories cannot ever work, okay? And what we're trying to get, even though I'm incorporating this concept of grams of carb, which is still probably part of my old school tradition that I shouldn't even do, to be quite honest with you, because we want people to be able to eyeball things and say, this looks good to me. This is the portion that's right for me. Calorie restriction, everybody knows this is an important thing. You can only calorie restrict if you're incorporating healthy fats and feel full. Every study on calorie restriction, when it's done forcibly, never works. It can literally drive you insane. Okay? So you have to have a sense of fullness. You can only get fullness through fats. The only way to get fats as part of your diet and eat those is by cutting down the carbohydrates. Because I cannot emphasize this enough. If you eat carbs and fat together, if that's a take-home message, wow, I have to eat a lot more fat. Oh, and I'm going to keep eating this many carbs. Woo! We've got a problem, okay? And so the only thing I want to say on that question is this is if you want to lose weight, 50 to 100 grams, less than 400 calories per day of carbs, total carbs, maintenance less than 150 or 150 grams of carbs, which is 600 calories, sorry. Anything more than that, weight gain and other dangers. I agree completely with the basic concept there. We have to get people away too much. We've got to learn to eyeball the decacard meat serving, the CD case vegetable, and enjoying your food and adding spices and learning to love our food again and trust it, but be present with it, all right? So, and this is the primal blueprint laws from that same Mark Sisson. Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't answer.
Yeah, what about priority?
Again, this is where the question is about high arginine foods. And so, for instance, one of the concepts of eating a higher fish diet, which is higher in lysine, okay, is that it isn't just the omega-3s in the fish that are good for us. There's lysine, which has a nice antiviral effect. And if we eat foods higher in arginine, certain nuts and other things, that might be bad for us. I think that takes us back down to reductionism again. We want to see the foods, see how our body responds to them. Because the reductionistic approach, meaning I've got to attack calories, I've got to attack carbs, and attack every of these other things. When I'm talking about eating certain amounts of carbs, if you cut out those things that I talked about, you'll find yourself right within that frame just by eating in terms of in that sweet spot in terms of total calorie content. So the point being, though, is it possible that certain foods, nuts especially, might have higher arginine levels and might affect negatively. I would say cutting out the toxins known as sugar, which is much worse for our immune system, plays a much bigger role, okay? And I think this is a much more important thing than all the insecticides and all the pesticides and all the other things. Don't get me wrong. If you eat organic, you will be cutting those things out anyways, all right? The most important thing, though, is these macronutrients. We got to cut processed carbohydrates, grains, sugars and legumes as much as we can out of the diet. Yes.
So, so corn is out. What about the rice and like rice pastas? Is that
a grain?
It's a grain.
I'm just helping you answer your own question. Okay. Yeah.
So, even though you'll see so many things in the stores that will say
that's the biggest problem.
But they have rice.
Right. rice pasta has a higher, worse effect on your insulin levels than gluten pasta. Okay. So is it gluten-free? Yes. And is it okay? That's the thing. That's exactly the point. Your question is actually pretty much the point of reason when I started to do this talk, where I started and where I got to. Okay. And my experience as a doctor is everybody seems to now on these gluten-free diets go gluten-free pastas and rice pastas, and they think, wow, this is healthy. I'm eating gluten-free, and they're getting heavier and heavier because they have the same problem. There are carbohydrates that lead to insulin surges, which is the cause of so much disease, and they expand the fat tissue and lead to so many other hormonal regulation problems. So that's what we're trying to get people away from.
So,
yes.
Can someone who doesn't have celiac,
well, you know, yes. I mean, this guy follows, and everybody knows that for a long time I've been following this basic 80-20 rule. If you can be 80% on, you can have a 20% cheat factor. Okay, now, that being stated, I found most people, that's a slippery slope, and 20% of cheat becomes 80% cheat pretty dang quick. Okay, and so, and if you're in a metabolic debt phase, okay, and people know that this is the equivalent I use when I talk about weight loss. If you have extra pounds of weight, you have a metabolic debt that you need to pay back. And so, and then that paying back means you have to be spot on to get to a lean weight that is chosen by you, okay? Your doctor, healthcare provider, however you want to get counseling on that to get there. So the first step is, am I at a healthy weight for myself? And if I paid back the metabolic debt that I need to, my extra weight. And if I haven't, then I need to be closer to being on than anybody else. This crowd is pretty darn good from being healthy in terms of that standpoint. But we need to look, do I need to be closer to spot on, not 80-20, but 100% on? Can anybody eat? I mean, obviously across the world, people are eating rice across the world. So when I say this talk is for Americans, I want to emphasize this talk is for Americans. You know, you can, they were showing the study that supposedly showed like a certain heart disease hypothesis that certain sugarcane workers were eating sugarcane like all day long, okay? And they wouldn't have any evidence of heart disease. Well, this is the most physically demanding job in probably the entire world. So you're using that glucose instantaneously, okay? Nobody was working as hard as these poor sugarcane workers. Yeah, they were down in sugarcane, but they could handle it. And so I want to emphasize, yes, if you are in a, you know, vigorous job like that, you can eat carbs, you know, until you're blue in the face because you're using them instantaneously and having less of an effect, using the muscles and things. Because when we talk about the biggest issue, and let's move this thing, lift heavy things, sprint once in a while, fast twitch muscles burn, use insulin better and use glucose better. So a lot of people face this. This is especially true for women. I eat this 360 calories less per day for 8 years and I gain 2 pounds. I lose 2 pounds, but I'm thicker around the middle. Yeah. You know, I see some of the thinnest women coming to me. I've got a belly and they get like this much. but it's different for them. And I'm glad they're paying attention. Okay. The difference is they're the ones that go out and they do the spin class for an hour in a row and they're torturing their bodies and they're not doing anything to support the fast twitch fibers. They're not doing the interval training. Interval training is making a big comeback, but it's a very guy-like way to exercise. Burst to exhaustion, rest. Burst to exhaustion, rest. That's the way to exercise. Long-term running. Mark Nissen, who was a former marathon runner, talked about how as healthy as he appeared, he was one of those most unhealthy people around because of his marathon running. Marathon runners have the same rate of heart disease as obese people. So I tell people, marathon running, although impressive, more impressive to be a marathon runner than obese, okay, yes, I'm going to give that to you, okay, healthy or no. Okay? And that's the problem. Americans, we tend to not be able to just do running or exercise for 20 minutes at a time. We have to do, 23 miles because the guy dropped dead at the end of that. I must be healthy. Think about it. No, seriously. But it goes into the whole point of this is it's a whole process to be healthy. Now, the biggest thing missing from all these things, because it's passed on, is the importance of consciousness. Okay? The truly human evolving thing, which is to be present, because stress is the reason you guys choose comfort foods, and me too. Stress is the reason why we're making all kinds of decisions, not being present with any moment. And it's taking us through technology, and we're spending more time on Words with Friends or other things, okay, and not as much time with the people that we're really meant to be with. And so I can't emphasize enough that this is a whole process and involves all of these things. It's not just about the way we eat, because there's caveats where we started with to any rule that we talk about. If you're intensely active, yes, of course, you can have pasta and some other things if you're using it, okay? But most of us aren't. We have fairly sedentary lives. Yes?
And so going back to fat, that since you say that there are the pros and cons for people drinking milk, do you suggest people drink whole milk?
Absolutely. If you drink organic as much as possible, okay, so, and whole fat, because the fat isn't the problem. It's actually all the sugar in there. You take the fat out, you've just made yourself a super sugary drink, which is much unhealthier for you. So, and that goes back into the mythology. If you had bacon and eggs in the morning, okay, is that healthier and lasts longer than eating grape nuts, fat-free milk and orange juice? And the answer is extraordinarily healthier and less of an effect on cholesterol, less effect on insulin, less effect on everything. So that healthy breakfast is one of the most unhealthy things that ever happened to humanity, because it was so profoundly misguided by the idea that fats were bad for you. Okay. Now, on that, are there bad fats? Yes. Trans fats, as found, okay, in all hydrogenated oils present in all processed foods, are to be avoided. They're toxic beyond belief. That's its own subject, and another talk later, okay? So no hydrogenated oils. Second of all, if we cook, we want to cook with saturated fats like coconut oil or ghee. If we use any vegetable oils, use olive oil, okay? Use olive oil. Most of the transition from saturated fats to vegetable oils has been another part of the demise of human health. And so vegetable oils are extraordinarily toxic for many, many ways. Okay? So sesame oil can be used because it's a seed oil, and it can be used not for cooking because it has a low burning temp. Okay? But it can be used as, say, a dressing, salad dressing, things like that. Grapeseed oil is decent. Safflower is not a healthy oil for many reasons. And contents and ratios of fats that are there. Soy milk, unsweetened soy. Well, it's a couple levels. You know, the first mythology, and I can't emphasize this enough, I don't think anybody needs dairy. I don't eat much myself. I want to be clear about that. The biggest mythology, once again, is that if I can't have milk, I must have to substitute for it. And the whole things of almond milk and all these other things are out there because we think we need that. We don't need any of it, okay? Now, soybeans have a lot of lectins that can be damaging, okay? And they have some potential positives as well, but I'm going to go into that. If you have an unsweetened, like almond milk or coconut milk, those are the best options if you feel you need a milk substitute. Yes. Okay. The key with those things is they're still not satisfying. They don't have the healthy fats that keep, they're like putting that log on the fire so that you're being burning through the day and you can tend to something other than your fire. Okay. We want to have fats burning through our body because that's what we run best on. And that gets into, when we get to things like ketogenic diets and things next time, you run great on beta-hydroxybutyric acid, okay, ketone bodies. Cancers and other things don't. So can you run extraordinarily well and extraordinarily healthy on a high-fat diet? Yes. It's still a quality issue, though. I cannot emphasize the thing I'm trying to hammer home, quality, quality, quality over quantity. And anything you eat, whether it's a carbohydrate, a fat, or a protein, if it has poor quality, and you're starved, eat as little as possible so you can get to the next feeding place and eat something healthier.
I'm sorry, you said that marathon runners are not healthy. Is it because of the stress?
Because of long-term oxidative stress that's damaging to the joints. It's it's a pro-inflammatory response to exercise that hard. Leads to a lot of inflammation and a lot of oxidation to your body because it's extraordinarily stressful. So, and the marathon running, sorry. So marathon running and triathlons, I'm not saying aren't impressive. So once again, please, those are very impressive things to do. I'm not taking away from that. However, most of us were exercising to be healthy. And if those things, and pro athletes with such a short, you know, decades long, shorter lifespan than the rest of us, it's so much evidence of how unhealthy exercising to that extreme is. So that's the whole point. Can you get more out of doing especially interval training and go on with your life and play more? I can't, and hold on. And this is a thing. What he's saying, move frequently, one of these rules, okay? move frequently at a slow pace. So really what I would talk about, what I call hiking and other things, to be exercise. No, it's moving frequently at a slow pace, okay? It's good for you. It's daily activity. Please, I'm not saying not to do it. Play more, okay? Get out in the sun and play games, okay? These are extraordinarily healthy rules. I think you're hard-pressed to, I like this one, avoid stupid mistakes, So that's basically risk management. If you do, any kind of exercise, please take care of yourself, okay? Spend some time, pay attention to the world. Don't be texting and driving. It's as bad as drinking and driving, et cetera. I mean, is this a huge thing? Yes. Using your brain is a huge thing. Getting sunlight's a huge thing. It's not just about eating right. It's, wow, there's a lot of things we got to do. Yes.
I've heard a couple of professionals that pretty much say what you say, and they both said, but the one thing they need is the steel-cut oatmeal.
Uh-huh. Steel-cut oatmeal, again, it comes back into that 80-20 rule. If you're, it's down within. The key is the metabolic parameters, so biofeedback. So the first metabolic parameter, pay attention to your weight, specifically abdominal fat. That's the first feedback that you're having issues with insulin, carbohydrates, lectins, etc. Digestive tract, that's another biofeedback. Okay, so you're digesting perfectly. You have perfect weight for yourself. Okay, and when I say that, I'm not asking people to be 5% body fat ultra athletes. The Phelps of the world and the Ryan Lochtes, incredible athletes. They're not predicting long-term health. They're just being incredible athletes. Bodybuilders would tell you they would do whatever, and if they died 30 years younger, they wouldn't care. Okay, so I can't emphasize it. The athletes of those levels, although impressive, are not who we're looking for long-term healthy behaviors.